Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
It's 101.9 Hi FM. Gus Silver joining us on the line this morning. Gus, good morning. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. Thanks. And you, Howard?
Yeah, I'm well, thank you.
Good.
I was thinking the other day how our language, our lexicon has completely changed. I think all for the bad. I'm trying to find a positive that comes out of it. But it's all really just quite annoying, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, the amazing thing is that actually there's a number of expressions that over the years have come from the world of epidemiology that we've got used to. Like, for instance, the most famous one is tipping point, you know, which is when an epidemic reaches the point where it becomes highly infectious. And a word, funny enough, that you don't hear much these days is viral, which obviously comes from the same thing. But you don't terribly much hear it because viral now kind of means something a lot scarier than a social media post being shared by a lot of people. But you have a language, language mutates and language shifts, and language very much kind of takes its cue from what people are talking about. So dictionaries are suddenly having to include words that previously were only known to epidemiologists, like social distancing, another great example.
Mm.
Flatten the curve, quarantine. We're all using these words now as if we're actually epidemiologists.
Well, ivermectin. I mean, most of us could really give an hour lecture on ivermectin, even though we're completely clueless. I mean, I'm not saying that that's a word, but that that's obviously just a brand name. But even things like, you know, we use Teams as a meeting point in our office, but we talk about Zooming each other.
That's right. No, absolutely. Now, Zoom at this time last year, Zoom was a very little-known app used only by a few people, largely in America. Now we talk, it's now become you now say, I'm going to be on a Zoom, so don't interrupt me. Words, expressions like unmute yourself, We all know exactly what they mean because they come from this world of Zoom that previously was unknown to us.
Yeah, it's just phenomenal. And of course, then there's the real annoying ones, unprecedented. That one is my worst, because really, is it? I don't even know if it is or isn't.
That's right. I can't stand new normal, as if normality is kind of in any way kind of prevalent at any time. There's no such thing really as normal. But this idea of we're now in a state where people are talking about the coming new normal, which is like beyond the pandemic, as opposed to the new normal being the pandemic.
Oh, gosh, I hadn't heard
so
that.
That's
one.
Another expression that kind of has outlived its usefulness, I think.
Yeah. But what are we meant to do, though? I mean, that is the funny thing, is we look for ways to describe what has become our reality. So I guess new normal sounds cool. It's got a bit of alliteration. We like that as well. It slips off our tongue, but then it just becomes irritating.
That's right. Things like second wave and third wave and, one that I quite like, is elbow bump as opposed to fist bump, the way we now supposedly greet each other in public. But I think in a way it's actually quite nice to have our language given a little bit of an injection of topicality. I think,
I'm noting the words you used. You've used language mutating, injection of topicality.
Yes, that's right, which are all kind of epidemiological words. But I think my favorite word from the pandemic so far is a word that has kind of been around before the pandemic. It used to mean being hungover, which is Blursday. As in, what day of the week is it? Oh, it's Blursday. All the days kind of blur into
one another. Love that.
That was particularly prevalent during the hard lockdown when it actually was very difficult to know what day we were living in. But these words, I think they kind of enrich the language. And also what they do is they kind of point the language to a very specific era of time. In years to come, we'll forget these words, and then suddenly we'll see them in a novel, we'll hear them in a movie, and we'll think, I remember the pandemic, So I think there's some good to come out of these.
I guess it's words like the Blitz,
Exactly.
That denoted a very specific time.
It only means something to a certain generation, and this will happen in years to come. Children born way beyond the pandemic will grow up discovering these words, and they'll immediately kind of wonder what they were, and it'll interest them in history as well. So I think in a way, look at a word like D-Day, which kind of worked its way into our everyday vocabulary, but it only really means something to people who grew up in the war years. So, yeah. You know, the author William Burroughs actually said language is a virus. He described it very well. It infects us. It kind of it catches on. It becomes viral. And I think we're living through a very interesting time for the language. It's words that become cliches drive us mad, but still, it's exciting.
Yeah, Ivanis says, my worst is pivot. Yeah. And agile. Ivana, what about agile? You've got to be agile. You've got to pivot. Yes.
Yeah. No, that's right. Now, those boardroom words actually, you know, they irritate me much more than the pandemic words. Because they lose their meaning. Pivot did once mean something. Agile did once mean something. It now completely means nothing. It's just boardroom buzzwords.
Jenny says as well, things like PPE. Like, would you have known what PPE was? I certainly didn't know what PPE was when I first heard the expression.
That's right. Well, also, what's different about this pandemic from previous ones is that we all have access to instant knowledge and instant information. So we very quickly can become experts in the field. And we don't need to explain to anyone what PPE is. We just learn it very quickly. So we kind of, in a way, you know, every industry has its jargon. And the jargon of epidemiology was once kind of closed off only to people working in the field. We now kind of have had that jargon spill over into our everyday language. So in a sense, it's good that our knowledge broadens.
And continually evolving. We probably are going to be completely, well, we're already getting sick of these words. And I guess like the pandemic, we just want some of them to disappear.
That's right. Yeah, I know these are very strange times, but also culturally they're very interesting times, and picking up on how the language is changing is, for me, it's fascinating because I work with words, but it's also kind of interesting to see how quickly words catch on. Another one that people knew nothing about previously and suddenly has become big is super spreader, which used to refer to a single individual who spread a virus, sometimes without even being symptomatic. We all know now what a super spreader event is. These words become very familiar to us through headlines and through social media and through interviews we watch online, etc.
Dean says, this one I hadn't heard. It's actually quite nice. Words of the pandemic I heard on Radio 4, empathy fatigue.
That's a very good one.
I like that as well. I'm actually going to be using that one. Dean, thank you. I'm definitely...
I think that's like enough. I've had enough. I can't take any more. And there's actually, I think there comes a point where you actually want to quite deliberately avoid the news. And I think that's where our kind of Netflix fixation comes from. We want any kind of antidote from the... You know, there's a term also that I think Americans coined it called doom scrolling, which is scrolling and scrolling through the news, and it's just doom and gloom, and that's all it is. So Netflixiation, to use another coined word, is the opposite of that. We turn away from the doom, and we watch series, and we kind of, you know, The Queen's Gambit and Tiger King. Suddenly we're all talking about those rather than talking about
Bridgerton,
the pandemic.
Well, it's interesting because talking about empathy fatigue, I was on a bit of a rant earlier because I can't stand this fixation on how exhausted Cyril Ramaphosa looks. We all look exhausted at 8 o'clock at night. I mean, if you had to take a picture of me at 8 o'clock last night, you would have been absolutely horrified. Of course he's exhausted. He had a big day. He met a plane, took selfies with the vaccine. He was tired, but we all are. So what, you know, this fixation and I suddenly realized that maybe a few family meetings ago, there's another word. I would have also maybe felt a bit bad for him looking exhausted last night. I couldn't have cared at all.
Yeah.
I had empathy fatigue.
Yeah, that's right. Now, we've become very used to these so-called family meetings. And it's our one opportunity to actually kind of take a very close-up look at the president, who normally is a figure a little bit kind of beyond our everyday life. So, people do very quickly become experts on the president's state of mind, judging him by the way he looks. And, as you quite rightly say, if the camera had to be turned to, on the other side, the president would be very concerned with the way we all look.
Well, he should be because we hang on to every word. We're completely hypervigilant when it comes to watching his every move, just in case there's a sign there that we need to be aware of.
And once again, I mean, you know, we talk quite casually and easily about levels, you know. We all know exactly what level three is. We all know exactly what lockdown is. These are, once again, jargon terms that would have meant nothing to us last year, but we're acutely attuned to the subtle differences between level three and level two and level five, which is a big nightmare. We all know these things, so we've all, in a sense, have become experts in gradation of epidemiological phases. It's quite fascinating how quickly we could become attuned to other people's jargon.
And it goes beyond that, because we've got levels of the pandemic, but we've got stages of load shedding. Load shedding being another word.
Yeah, that's right. No, yeah, in South Africa, we have other kind of jargon phrases that we kind of just take for granted. So, you know, we know the difference between lockdown and load shedding, and we know what happens when both of those coincide. So yeah, we speak our own language. And I think social media is also responsible for very quickly spreading these things, which to me is a good thing. It kind of keeps us engaged. It keeps us on the same level and plane of understanding.
It was always fascinating for me. I think if it wasn't for global media, we would definitely speak. I mean, we already do speak a very different English to what the Americans speak, that which the Americans speak. But it's really just because of media and our obsession with maybe American media that we even really understand what they're saying. They probably don't understand us because they're not exposed to us at all. But it is very it's fascinating, and some of these words that we've used are so specifically South African that if you had to have this conversation in another part of the world, I don't think they would have a clue what we were talking about. Family meetings and load shedding.
That's right. Every society has its own kind of glossary. Like, you know, if you study Australian English, even just reading Australian newspapers, you'll see that they have a very different pandemic vocabulary. For instance, Australians love to abbreviate words, so they talk about ISO. Mm-hmm. I'm going into isolation. Mm. They talk about fanny before sanitizer. Put some fanny on your hands. But they abbreviate absolutely everything. And if you're not attuned to that, you wouldn't know what they're talking about. So, each region, often each city, has its own particular way of speaking, and that does kind of filter over into our pandemic language.
It's really, really fascinating, and I really love this conversation. And how often do you? I mean, is it during an event like this that suddenly we get this plethora of new words, or is this happening all the time? But we're so focused on one event that we're only noticing it now.
That's right. Well, I think our attention and our interest has been incredibly concentrated over the last 12 months. I mean, I remember very, very clearly in March last year hearing for the first time the term social distancing, and I was quite fascinated by it, and I immediately thought this is going to be the word of the year. We hadn't begun social distancing at that stage, but it just seemed such a kind of new word, keeping a distance from each other in public, and once again, previously only epidemiologists had ever used that term. So I just kind of found this it's not necessarily a coining of new words, it's a kind of village of old words from other industries and professions, but the way we pick up so quickly on these words that they hardly even need to be explained to us. You know, we're very used to going into a mall and seeing circles on the floor in every single shop saying, you know, my favorites are support social distancing in Woolworths, you know, as if you're supposed to cheer when you see it. Yay, social distancing.
Spare a thought for social distancing.
It becomes a part of our vocabulary, and we'll use them forevermore, you know. We'll always think of not getting too close to people. Keep your distance socially. So on one level, it's scary that we need to know these words. On another level, it enriches the language and the way we communicate. All new words add to the variety of the way we speak. And I think that's ultimately a good thing.
I think you're absolutely right. It's such an awesome perspective. Gus Silber, thank you for taking the time to speak to us. We were chatting about words of the pandemic and how our language has changed. It is 7:28. That was Gus Silber, a journalist, editor, speechwriter, and author.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.